Okay. We're talking today about a considerable number of things all at once, but all of them add up to communication. And if in these 2 hours I can give someone an inkling that it is possible to communicate with the subject of communication, we will have won on this Monday, October 10th, 1955. We will have won. Communication. Many of you will believe the communication, as defined in Scientology, has had or accumulated to itself new barriers. Funny part of it is the various provisos in Scientology that have to do with communication are there to jump communication barriers. Now let us take immediately and instantly this matter of the code of Scientologist. Disruption of this code from a communication standpoint would bring about less communication from Scientology to the world and the world to Scientology. Now, at once, let's look it over here and discover whether or not this is true. Let's just take number one. To hear, speak no word of disparagement to the press, public, or preclears concerning any of my fellow Scientologists, our professional organization, or those whose names are closely connected to this science. Do you see that at once as something which will promote communication, not as something which will impede it? You see that? Now, we have communication, then, as a general subject, but we have two other things connected to communication which are quite interesting. And one is affinity and the other is reality. And when we try to communicate with bad affinity, we don't communicate. An angry man shouting at another person is simply saying, "Don't communicate with me." And he may be uttering words and particles, but he is not communicating. There is nothing quite as out of communication as a very angry man. And trying to talk to a person who is in almost total apathy is again a no communication. There's no terminal there receiving the communication. You say, "Now, things won't be too bad." And he says, "Gah." An angry communication, a communication without good affinity, is worse than no communication at all because it promptly shuts a communication line. It is, quote, communication, unquote, calculated to close communication, underscore. We see this? Now, you could communicate in a way calculated to stop all communication. And the best way to do that is to talk as though you were communicating and not communicate. And one of the ways you could do that would be to get angry. You know, one of the finest ways in the world to shut a communication line is to start a randomity of some kind going through the mails. We write Jones a letter, and we say, "Dear Jones, what the merry hell is the idea of?" That's a wonderful way to stop that mail line. He will write back and say, "I didn't, he did, and furthermore, you are." Got it? And then you, being incensed, will say, "Well, if you feel this way about it, then you can go too." And then he doesn't reply. So as we start down into MEST, we start cutting communication lines. The descent down the tone scale is the descent into MEST. How do we create MEST? We create MEST simply by second postulates, which are untruths, and which we make very sure are observable untruths, which are N theta, one kind or another. And we create MEST. It's very easy to create MEST. All you have to do is get mad and get apathetic and put lots of particles into the communication line. Now, you know how I discovered that originally. It might be of interest to you. I discovered it myself. I found out in trying to get out information to the organization that when I typed it, and it then had to be copied on a stencil, and then the stencil had to be given to somebody else to be run through a mimeograph machine, and then those stacks of material had to be distributed by yet somebody else, I discovered it didn't have a communication line. One of the oddities was the directions on how to run a 36-hour intensive. All of those directions were carefully typed by me. They were all set up. 36-hour intensives were being done all over the place. There were certain definite things you had to do, certain provisos, in connection with it, in order to make them fairly successful. And this was typed onto a stencil, and it was run through a machine, and it was placed by the manager of the Elizabeth Foundation at that time, very quietly and very securely, in the back of a file drawer, and was never distributed. Similarly, five other bulletins of great interest to Dianeticists were carefully stacked on top of it, all finished and ready to distribute, but were never distributed. Don't think that didn't cause some randomity. I would be very often talking about these bulletins without being aware of the fact that they had never been received. You got that? It was randomity of this character, introduced with malice and forethought into the original foundations, which caused their demise and the unhappiness of the people connected with them. Demises are caused by sending out four communications in a row, and then the receiving end produces the fourth one sent as the first one offered at the other end. You see how this would be upsetting? The fourth one modifies the first three, but doesn't contain what they contain. So it looks completely insane and idiotic. And that was exactly what people intended to have happen, but didn't want the foundations to survive. No, he didn't. See that? A person can't have very good intentions to do a thing like that, but nevertheless, that's what's going on. Well, I learned earlier than that occurred this interesting thing. I just learned it by observing what was necessary to create a communication. I found out that if I cut the stencil, I myself cut the stencil, and placed it in the hands of the mimeograph people, that the material got out faster. See, we'd cut one via out of the line. Ah, very interesting. Let's cut another via out of the line. I'll cut the stencil and spin it off on the machine and hand it to people. And communications got through with the greatest of ease. No difficulty at all. Follow that? And I said, there must be some law at work here. The less messed in the communication line, the more communication. Nah. The less messed, the more communication. And that was the birth of the tone scale. In other words, the boys helped us out. Might never have learned that if it hadn't been for this other activity and stacking up those things in the back of that file drawer. See, I just might never have, because it was a very important thing to me to communicate to auditors and get communications from them. So, the more messed, the less communication. The less messed, the more communication. Up to this interesting point, where you get a don't-know terminal. You get a terminal that is unknowable. And then again, we get a failure of communication. Thus, we do have affinity and reality entering into the matter, even though we have a thetan standing there who is invisible. You got that now? Because sooner or later you will run across this conundrum, and you will say, now, wait a minute. He says observable terminal. A thetan. And then it says, at the same time, that an invisible thetan is the best condition to be in. Which doesn't make sense. Well, an invisible thetan isn't the best condition to be in. A thetan who loses his ability to be visible or to call attention to himself goes out of communication. Hence my words a little while ago about St. Maus. In other words, communication is in itself in the same band that a game exists. As long as we have terminals and knownness, we have communication. As long as we've got affinity and reality. So therefore, we have to have intention. Well, communication itself is a very arduous definition. And if you think that we're putting up barriers by putting up rules as to how to communicate, the rules that we're putting up is an invitation to stay in the band which as is as things. See? And which still retains a game. And if we do this, then we continue to have communication. And bad things that come up will be as is. They can't help but be as is. But we lay down this first little rule in the code of the Scientologist. That's just a request to go on communicating about Scientology. We start running disparagement, upset, in theta of one kind or another. We simply cut the communication line just as thoroughly as though we wrote an angry letter through the mail, you see? See how that could be? Now, there's many a person been around you who was using words and who wasn't communicating. Many a person. Now, someone who stood and argued at you by the hour was using words in a way to make you disgusted with words, which themselves are the building blocks of communication. And if this person could work this operation and make you thoroughly enough disgusted with words, he would make you disgusted with communication by identification of words with communication. Do you understand? Now, get the operation. He's standing there saying, wah, 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 wah. He's apparently talking. See? Well, he's talking all right, but he's not communicating. And if he then holds up to you these very things that you use for communication as bad things, he's making an example. He himself is dramatizing impossible to communicate. Now, that person is a tough person to handle in a pre-clears bank only because he was pretending to communicate and he was wrecking communication. We see this? So therefore, he becomes hard to handle in the bank. Why is he hard to handle in the bank? Because the total postulate back of all the lower scale things he was doing with communication was impossible to communicate. An angry man is saying, don't you communicate with me or anything else. If you have a man standing there, or a woman standing there being angry, and you just put out a communication line in their general direction, their anger goes up in velocity. They get more angry. You ever notice that? Well, why do they do that? It's because their postulate is that communication is impossible, and you dog, are showing them that communication is still possible. You're alive. You can still talk. And if you can still talk, therefore, you are making them a liar. They're standing there going, yap, 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 yap. And everything they're saying adds up to communication is impossible. You better not communicate with me. A cactus has this postulate very thoroughly. And you communicate immediately with a cactus on a messed basis, with a terminal very handy there, and it tells you that communication's impossible. But one time, just because I was interested in the personality of cactus, I started throwing postulates into a cactus. You know, the day is nice, the world is wonderful, and furnishing the acknowledgments, and the cactus went, wilt. Now, you think you saw a cactus perishing. You didn't. That isn't what was happening. You saw the armament and postulate of the cactus perishing. Different thing. Actually, the cactus was better off wilted than it was fully armed. It was actually freer. Now, that's an oddity. I'm not just being slippy with my logic. That's a fact. Now, if you start talking to a man who is angry, talk to him with a sufficient distance, and you will find out that the most amazing things occur if he cannot immediately reach you to strangle you. Something interesting occurs. His anger goes zoom, boom, thud. He starts to get sorry he was talking to you, and he does all kinds of odd things. What you're doing is unmocking this thing which is pretending to communicate but isn't communicating. And what you do is unmock the pretense. You get a little bit of distance there so that you're out of hand reach, and you have this interesting thing occur. The individual now has to communicate and comes upscale. He has to still reach it. Well, here we have, then, in the code of a Scientologist, not to go on with the rest of the code, not any barriers, but we have propped open a door, and from 1 to 10, we're trying to keep a door open. We're trying to keep a door open by describing the passageway and the door. That's all we're trying to do. And we start knocking these off, you know, and say, well, we won't follow 6 to discourage the abuse of Scientology in the press. What would happen if we didn't discourage the abuse of Scientology in the press? Well, a lot of things would happen. The press would just go on yapping on an N theta line. One way or the other. Just go on printing up stuff and saying this same dramatization. There's no communication with Scientology. Well, actually, the press, this is based on this, the press is not a good communication line. It never has been. It never will be. You just open up a newspaper. It's a highly generalized thing. It is devoted mainly to N theta. It is not trying to inform. It's trying to tell people how impossible it is to communicate to anybody anywhere. And that is the usual newspaper in the world today. In Spain, which is a fairly high-tone country, in spite of its more recent adventures, it's quite interesting to look at the front page of it and find out that it has a dedication speech to the memorial and a discussion of some literary work and the fact that fishing has now opened in some quarter of the land. And that's front page stories. We go on through it, and we finally find on the back of the last page, in the bottom of the column, we find that there were some things happened in the police department. There were a couple of people murdered, and there was a bomb thrown, and so forth, and that's the end of that thing. Well, those newspapers are quite avidly read. Newspapers went off the deep end with a fellow by the name of Willie Hurst. Yeah, and we'd hardly call him William Randolph. That's too dignified, and he certainly was never very dignified. And Willie got himself a handful of idea. And it was a handful of idea. It wasn't an idea. And his papa, Senator Hurst, had gotten there one way or the other. And Willie started up and really more or less invented yellow journalism. And he more or less began his career as a newspaper publisher by sending a photographer down to Cuba to cover the war. And the photographer wrote back from Cuba. He says, there's no war down here. Well, yes, the Cubans were supposedly rising against the Spaniards in hot insurrection. About 1897, the photographer says there's no war. And Willie, as a great genius, knowing now how you sold newspapers, sent him back a dispatch and said, "You send me the pictures and I will furnish you the war." And he did, and that war was the Spanish-American War. A cute boy. He's got this, went off half-cocked on this completely haywire theory that all you did was have to publish enough N theta and you were all set and you would sell newspapers. And it didn't work then. Newspaper circulation dropped. And it doesn't work now. And you know why it doesn't work now? It's because it isn't communication. Now, everybody thinks that things like the Journal American and other papers like this are doing a tremendous amount of communication. They must be selling lots and lots and lots of copies. They are not selling as many copies as they should for the increase of the population during the interval of time. In other words, we plot the increase of the population, we plot the number of copies they have sold per year, and we find out we have a very steep fall on the sale of papers. And another little test. There is a paper in Washington, D.C. called the Evening Star, which has tried to hold to some communication within its pages. It's not a good paper. It's not a bad paper. During the Republican regime, it has been made to republish a lot of things it ordinarily wouldn't have published. But it looked very much, 100 years ago, it's a very old paper, just like the Spanish papers that are being published today. You had to go through all pages and look at the last column in the paper to find that news. You know about the police. I was looking through an edition of 1868, I think it was, one time down in the Star offices, and we got over to police reports, last column, bottom of the page, buried as far as you could bury an item. And the leading item in the 12 lines of crime was this: an actress was murdered last night at the National Theater. Next story. Now, I grew up around newspapers and communication lines, worked on them. Another paper there called the Daily News, a Scripps Howard paper, which believes that you should publish quite a bit of news of immediate moment and so forth. The Scripps Howard lines, however, come halfway between the Star policy and the Hearst policy. It's just about halfway between. Hearst had two papers in Washington, D.C. at one time, and they were very fine papers. There were several papers there. There was the Washington Daily News, the Evening Star, and the I think the Journal and the Herald. Might have been the American and the Herald. I've forgotten the name of the other paper. But these two papers were Hearst papers, and they were big papers when he bought them, huge papers. And these two papers occupied their own buildings and so forth. And there was the Washington Post, which was a little old paper that crept along. Nobody paid much attention to the Post in those days. But these had been big papers, the Herald, and maybe the other one was the Tribune. These two were big papers. I'll tell you something about yellow journalism that's quite interesting. Today, the two Hearst papers of Washington, D.C. have both failed. The only papers to fail in the last century. And they have both failed, and they've been bought by the Post. The Washington Post has bought both of them. And the Star is still going on, and the news isn't so bad. It still can communicate somewhat, and it's still going on. And the Post, having inherited some of the Hearst policy, is now slipping on its circulation, in spite of the fact that it has every comic strip of any importance in America. It's got all comic strips, and that's what most people buy papers for in the U.S., to read what Pogo's doing or so forth. But they haven't got Pogo, by the way. That's the only one the Star has got. They've got all the rest of them, pages of comics. Doesn't sell the Post. Post is slipping. Stock is becoming less and less worthwhile. It inherited enough Hearst policy to kill itself. And so, this is the history of the great newspaper empire. Actually, Hearst received continually tremendous sums of money to beat the drum for this and that and to ruin this and that in the country. And as the slimiest trail of material you ever heard of. It's taken up now, and we have several tabloids around the world. Daily Mirror, Truth in Sydney, Love Nest, or Professor Caught in Love Nest. And we find some old tramp was found sleeping in a garbage can, but they've got it blown up to Professor Caught in Love Nest. This stuff doesn't communicate, and we wonder why these papers rise, fall flat, and go away. Because they do that. They go on for a few years, selling more stock in themselves, trying to beat their advertising up. Advertisers think these newspapers are communicating, and so they buy tremendous quantities of advertisements in them, and then wonder why they don't sell more of their products. Interesting, isn't it? In other words, here we have this terrific postulate called yellow journalism, and we have its lack of success. Here, less than a half a century after it was invented, it's a gone dog. It should tell you that there's something peculiar going on, and that thing in the code of the Scientologist would only stay there as long as that postulate hangs around. If newspapers are determined not to communicate, well, let's at least duplicate as far as they are concerned. But don't fail to communicate with the newspaper. Just communicate with them and tell them they can't communicate. That's one of the trickiest things you can do, you know. We would be very, very happy to give you a story. Do you have a good law firm? How are your solicitors? You're awfully interested in their solicitors. I had a reporter getting white and green on this one time. He's a very important boy. He'd been sent around to nag us to death and so forth. He had his pockets full of money, too. No kidding. He'd been bribed to come around and write some bad stories. So I kept talking to him about the quality of his paper solicitors. I wanted to know who they were and where they were and so forth, so as to occasion our solicitors the minimum amount of trouble if he published anything. I was very conversational about the whole thing. Told him I'd give him all the information he wanted, anything he wanted to know, and so forth. And after we were about 20 minutes deep in it, I said, you realize that a tape recording has been going this entire time of this interview. And he looked around and couldn't find any microphone because it was sitting on the desk in front of him. And it was on a remote wire, and it was being recorded at high fidelity. He went away. He was upset. Newspapers are not communicating. So don't use a non-communicating medium. If you're going to communicate, why just go communicate? If you've got to communicate on the subject of what you're doing, go find yourself a radio spot or something. You know? Either that or just buy some time on the radio. Buy 15 minutes every week and take the more able speaker in the group and just give us a talk on it. Of course, that's not very easy to do here in Great Britain where there is no purchasable radio time. Or is it? There's Radio Luxembourg, and there are other radios on the continent which are listened to over here, which will sell you time. And I'm about to put in a radio station that'll be kicked through into Buenos Aires on the broadcast band. Been trying to do this for 5 years just to get a communication line. And now we've got more reasons than Scientology to have a communication line. See? And so we're working very solidly in the direction of a very, very good broadcast station. I would say offhand about 1,000,000 watts was about what we would need. Now, average peanut whistle station in the U.S. about 5,000 to 15,000 watts. And one station that can be heard the length and breadth of the U.S. is only a couple of 100,000 watts. So, you see that there is a possibility. I, by the way, don't think it's a couple of 100,000 watts anymore. I think it was cut to 50,000. And it's still heard all over the country. So if we can really boost up some wattage, we get ourselves a communication line. So why should we use non-communication mediums? Therefore, when you want to talk, don't use a non-communication medium through which to talk. Got it? Either patch up the thing or bypass it and still communicate. Well, I'm not going through the code of the Scientologist to you. I'm just giving you a little dope here, a little hot dope. Let me take these axioms. Do you know that an individual who tries to communicate through and past these axioms will eventually fall on his face? That sounds real strange, but if these axioms remained entirely unknown to you on a forgotten basis, an implantation basis, your communication lines would eventually fall flat. Understanding is composed of affinity, reality, and communication. That's axiom 21. What if we didn't have that axiom? We'd say any kind of communication is better than no communication. Do you know there was a fellow by the name of Schickelgruber? He was a corporal, I think his rank was. And he got mad all the time. And the area he was talking in was so low on communication anyhow that they thought this was communication. But do you know what all this talk finally amounted to? The more he talked, the less communication there was. And the more he talked, the more solidity there was. And when he had finally talked enough, the only answer he had left was a solid particle known as a soldier. Now tell me he was communicating. Because the more he talked, the more solid particle began to come out of the area from which he was talking. In other words, he talked himself down to the solidity of a tank. Now tell me he was communicating. He was talking, but he was not communicating. Now, we know that, axiom 21. We could have realized that this man, yapping from 1933, as far as the world was concerned, on, would have eventually sent solid particles our way. Because he wasn't communicating. He was making solid masses where he was and trying to shove them off with force. And that's what he thought. He thought he was communicating all his time. A lot of people around him thought he was communicating too. And they all said, gee, the best way to do then, if this is communication. Oh yes, we know now. You just get mad at everybody and break all the shop windows. You kill off all of one race. You tell everybody you're supermen. You build more tanks, you build more planes, you chew everybody up. Was it communication? No, other people had to communicate back one direction or another, and there yet has not been enough communication on the subject of this fellow Schickelgruber to as is all of the debris which has been left around. Because the world thought he was communicating too. And then they stupidly started sending back particles of equal magnitude. Of course, it made ridges and rubble. Do you know that you could have talked Hitler right straight out of existence when he first started talking if you'd been convinced that he should have been talked at? You know that he could have been made to disappear from the German national scene, not with ridicule, but with communication. And the mistake that the rest of the world made in the early days was not to communicate in his direction. They didn't communicate in his direction. They ridiculed in his direction. And that again was not communication, was it? He got to power because of a lie. He said the Weimar Republic had failed utterly and completely because of the meanness and the wickedness and the dirtiness of England and the U.S. So on. He told them that these countries did not want Germany to have any kind of freedom. Do a little more communication on this point at that point. A little more calm talk into Germany. Really would have been communication. And Hitler would have blown his brains out in 1934. Isn't that interesting? He would have. He's an angry man. All you had to do was communicate at him. Axiom 21. Understanding is composed of affinity, reality, and communication. So you might have realized that he couldn't have understood anything. You might have realized that your understanding of the situation depended to a very, very marked degree upon measuring this. And there was no affinity, and there was no reality, and there was no real communication. So that must have been insanity. And everybody more or less agreed that it was insanity. All you would have had to have done was to have talked at it. And if you'd talked at it, it eventually would have been talked to, and it would have gone by the boards. You would have entered understanding into Germany. But there had to be communication to put the understanding there. And the wrong time to communicate was when you had to send solid particles. When I had to be out there on a solid particle, dropping solid particles on solid particles. And you had to be diving under things to keep solid particles from coming down. You get the idea? When you see somebody who is pretending to communicate and isn't communicating, and you want to unmock him, all you have to do is communicate. And they blow up. But don't you have a piece of mess there to blow up with it? You got it? Now, Axiom 28 becomes very, very interesting because it's a long and it's a complex and it's an involved axiom, and it couldn't possibly be all this involved. If communication as is messed, what are we doing with the mess of Axiom 28? Well, it just means that the Axiom 28 had better not be a buried series of postulates operating hidden and unknown to us. If you can memorize these axioms, you will blow these stable data. You can't memorize them. You're having trouble blowing them. You're having trouble grasping them. And therefore, you are having trouble with them on the track. Darndest therapy you ever ran into are these axioms. Frank Baum in New Zealand has finally come to the conclusion that a constant study of the axioms is the therapy his group down there needs. He set them all to work at it now. It would amuse you very much that Jack came back to America saying, well, it's permissive, the study of Scientology, you know. I mean, well, I'm not going to force anybody to memorize axioms. And we worked him over when he came back. We worked him over. He came in there walking about 5 feet off the ground, he thought, but it looked to us like he was walking 5 feet under. So he said, well, now, Jack, one of the first things we want you to do is to memorize all those axioms. And Jack said, eek! He sounded like an air raid siren. He went into rebellion. But in Scientology, we actually work as a very, very good team. It's the fact that we're handling so much randomity that we sometimes look like we're not a team. But in a case like this, you see the teamwork suddenly develop. Jack would go someplace and sit down to swear quietly to himself, and he'd find himself talking to an auditor about it. Any place he went in Phoenix, he would find himself talking to an auditor. People had spotted him and bird-dogged him. Not because I'd said so, because they knew this had to be done. And about 24 hours later, Jack walked into class and he said, I decided to memorize the axioms. 24 hours after that, he walked in and he said, I can't. It's killing me. He had somatics. He was all upset. 24 hours after that, he walked in and said rather proudly, I have the first 10 memorized. And he memorized the rest of them. It was quite interesting. And after that, he became merciless, I hear, on making people memorize the axioms. But this complicated thing, Axiom 28, should be of great interest to you. Communication is the consideration and action of impelling an impulse or particle from source point across a distance to receipt point with the intention of bringing into being at the receipt point a duplication of that which emanated from the source point. Now, actually, it isn't long enough, but I was ashamed to write the rest of it. And so wrote Dianetics 1955, which is the remainder of this axiom. Now, you thought that was a long axiom, didn't you? Sure is. About 25, 30,000 words long. Needs the double horseshoe and all the rest of it. Now, the formula of communication is probably something that also seems upsetting at times. Cause, distance, effect with attention and duplication. But that's only one direction of the flow, you see. So the formula is also acknowledgement, origin, back to the original source point. But there's a whole book about it, so we won't worry about that. But we've certainly got to know that much about it. The component parts of communication. Now, believe me, the component parts of communication as just cause, distance, effect, which is the most elementary and incomplete look at communication you would ever do, are all very necessary to an understanding of communication. So much so that when you process any of its component parts, you win. You can process any part of communication and win. Another little joke on Jack, by the way. He called me up long distance from Washington State, which is about Lord knows how far away, and he told me he had just discovered a terrific process. Not a lot of Jack's processes are very good, but this one was very amusing. He called me up to tell me about this. That making people invent answers was a terrific process, and he just invented it and was using it with great success. And I said, thank you very much, Jack. Very often people think I am agreeing with them. I'm not agreeing with them. I'm acknowledging what they are saying. That sometimes is upsetting to people, but it's a fine line of division, which I find a very broad line of division. Somebody says to me, so-and-so, and I say, fine. And they say, well, now, what do you know? He agreed with that. No, I didn't agree with that. That's different. I acknowledged what you had said. And then sometimes people rush off without any further conversation on the subject or waiting for me. Another thing people do is fail to get my attention sometimes before they start talking, and that isn't a good communication either. If you don't have somebody's attention and you start talking, probably the first third of what you're saying will disappear before he looks up, and then he isn't aware of the fact that you said the first third or something of the sort, and so when he then agrees to what you've said, he doesn't know what you said. You get that, yeah? That's a completely missing point. So anyway, to show you how these things work out, Jack got to New York City, and he called me up on the phone, and he says, why did you agree with me that I had discovered that process about answers? And I said, well, Jack, I didn't agree with you. He says, well, darn you, he said, it's R271. He says, why didn't you tell me this? I was teaching this to people from the Creation of Human Ability over in England. And he slipped these cogs enough to invent the process, you see, a little bit later. What he had done was not invent a process, but cognite on a process. The only reason I'm bringing this up is this is a difference. He all of a sudden discovers the workability of something. So it's one thing to know the words and contents of the music and another thing to play the song. Follow me? So it's one thing to know all about this formula of communication and it's quite another thing to cognite on it. And if you cognited on all the parts of the formula of communication and the material in Dianetics 1955, and really cognited on it, you'd certainly come out of no communication in the darndest areas that you didn't know you were out of communication in. See? You got this? It's quite important for you to understand this. Now, one of the darndest processes you ever wanted to run in your life is just make a pre-clear sit there and knowingly go through each step of a two-way communication. Get the attention, intention, all the rest of it. It says here the component parts of communication are consideration, intention, attention, cause, source point, distance, effect, receipt point, duplication, the velocity of the impulse or particle, nothingness or somethingness. Gee, those are a lot of things. And you know that there are more of them? Acknowledgement and origin, aren't there? They're in Dianetics 1955. That's why we have to sort of paste the back cover of Dianetics 1955 on the bottom of page 17 in The Creation of Human Ability. We just paste it there as footnote. But you make a person go through the entire communication cycle of a double horseshoe with every component part of communication, and it kills him. Apathy and upset of all kinds start running off of this fellow. And you say, all right, now let's get the consideration that you're going to communicate. All right, he'll say. All right. Now, let's get the intention behind your communication, bad or good, what you're going to affect. Now, let's get the attention of that with which you're going to communicate. And now let's be the source point that's going to communicate. And now let's communicate. And now let's see the idea go across that distance of space and arrive with the other person. And now let's make sure now that they had the original attention, which you can put into the original commands. And now the intention of receiving the communication, their intention with regard to the communication. You get the rest of it. No reason to go on with this. You make a double horseshoe all the way around and make the pre-clear do each one of these parts. I have often thought that we probably ought to write them all down to just make it a standard process. You know, each possible point of the double horseshoe. I don't have to do that to write them down. You shouldn't have to do that either. You just sit back and just note which are the parts that now come next on the double horseshoe. It's the way I've run them pretty quick. Okay. And make then the origin communication. This now gets your attention. This live thing, see, gets your attention. Now, it has a consideration that is going to communicate an intention. Now, it is going to communicate something and have it impel the idea, vocalize the idea, impel it across space to you. You receive it and so forth. Boy, if you really go through those paces, it's terrific. But if you, as the auditor, have to sit there and sort these things out as you're fronting the pre-clear, just you're looking at the pre-clear and you sort these things out, you'll find it's an interesting therapy. Starts as-ising various tiny blocks on your communication line. You say, but nobody could possibly go through all of these steps every time he says everything. By God, you better had not have everything on automatic in the communication formula, because that's what it adds up to. Let's just put 9/10 of that formula on automatic. Let's just expect it all to occur. Boom. And that's what people are doing. Well, that they can communicate at all. It's fantastic. You have to put this into an awareness level if you really wanted to get a fellow into perfect communication. You'd have to be in an awareness level of each one of these points and be able to perform those points thoroughly before he could then duck them out of sight. If you wanted to cure a stammerer, you would write up this whole formula, carefully considering every part of it as a two-way horseshoe, see? And just put somebody through each pace of it. And then put them through each pace of it again. And they get all these things on automatic, and they start talking. But that's only addressed to talk. How about a thetan who can't stand up in space and squeak? I'll be frankly, I have a hard time getting a squeak out. And I found the only trouble with this squeak business is that I have depended on too many automaticities, and the automaticities are part of the body structure. Now, you could go through the formula yourself, but that's what it consists of. And any halt or trip or error which I have made in talking to you about this, and I've stumbled a couple of minor times talking to you about it, is because I've been drilling this myself in space. All by myself. And I've gotten it over so that I can get a squeak. And if I practice on it quite a bit longer and so forth, I'll get more in a squeak. But that would be the way to get somebody to talk, sitting in empty space. He's exteriorized. He's sitting in empty space. He's no longer looking at facsimiles. He's actually looking at the environment. And you would just have him postulate and consider and unconsider each one of these points as it went through in order to get a double horseshoe to an imaginary but live second terminal. You would get it to go through all of the things until he got the idea, and then he goes through all the things to get to the idea. Boy, he starts stuttering as a Thetan. And that's superior to being totally mute as a Thetan. Now, do you see how you'd turn on somebody's ability to talk? You just take this 28, you'd make a good list of every part of the double horseshoe, of exactly what he had to do each time, and it's a good thing for you to do it, too. And then just drill him on this while he's exteriorized. He'll get apathetic. He'll say, oh, no. We don't have to go through that long thing again, do we? Yes, we do, because he set it up on automatic in ages past, and then the machinery which he set up has now deteriorated and no longer exists as effective machinery, but he is falling across it as unknown barriers to his own communication line. He just can't say, well, now I sit up in space now. The easiest thing to do is just do the perfect thing. I'll just send this beam across, I'll just send the thought across and the person will receive it, and there's no reason to articulate any of this, and I'll just do that, and that's all there is. Oh, yeah? Well, that would be all right if he weren't falling across old machinery. But the old machinery starts to come alive. It starts to set itself up. And its first action is to stop his communication, because it is now inverted. Once it was supposed to assist, and now it's inverted and stops. And that's why a Thetan sitting in clear, empty space cannot talk. And why I today have no more ability than to squeak like a mouse. By the way, the first time that John got a Thetan, drilled a Thetan over a considerable period of time into communicating in empty space, why, the guy finally got up to a nice high-pitched squeak, which was audible to human sound, and he got the Thetan up to an ability to say, hello, John, in a high squeak in the middle of the room. One of the things that's destructive on this is the person then goes out and in this high squeak speaks to somebody as an unknown terminal. And, of course, the re-radiation of all this communication coming from nowhere and so forth usually knocks the Thetan flat because you get a backburst of energy. Boom, boom. Discourages them. They say, I better not talk to people that way anymore. These waves of horror and terror which are coming at me are too much for me to handle. This is why I get upset. Now, the totality of communication would be done independent of time, wouldn't it? A totality of communication would be done entirely independent of time. Is that so? You sure? Well, that's not true. A totality of communication would, theoretically, simply as is the game. It as is time, too. So you would have no level of agreement across which to communicate. You'd have no level of agreement on the time continuum. I've been talking to you about the time continuum. You wouldn't be in the same time continuum, so you wouldn't be communicating. So communication, when time itself is badly aberrated, or upset, or non-existent, and non-agreed upon, is very difficult. Now, there's the theoretical level that you simply could totally communicate, and everything would as is. But it would have to be given on any given time continuum. Got that? Any given time continuum might get a totality of communication for that time continuum. And it would as is, just as such. But this is too highly theoretical for us to handle. We are interested in time continua, and therefore we should never at any time attempt at this time anything more than communication in the same time continuum. And then we don't get any accidentals. Why is this? Because you have known terminals, known cause points, and known receipt points in the same time continuum, and you have, for a totality of communication, too many unknowns in terms of terminals and so on. Now, I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm merely saying at this time, we don't understand it. See, it's a principle that we can grasp in theory as a theoretical statement, but which is evidently not graspable in actual practice or application. Now, one of the main difficulties that a fellow by the name of Siddhartha had was trying to tell everybody that they should do a totality of communication without communicating. All he had to do was conceive of the essence of mind, and they were all set. There's no ladder to it. It's an impossibly high concept. The process which comes closest to it that we have is sit still, hold the two packed corners of the room, and don't think. If we just have the fellow sit still and not think, we get nowhere. If you don't believe this, sometime try it. Just try sitting still without thinking. Now, according to Buddha, you would have gone right straight on upscale. But according to our experience, without two stabilizing corners, you go straight on downscale. Meditation, therefore, has its limitations and is in itself a sort of booby trap, because meditation is sort of an only one idea of I don't have to communicate, something will simply happen, and we'll be all set. In other words, there's not enough understanding in it for communication to take place. And I don't think it's an understandable principle, but I think it's a booby trap, and that's my candid opinion of the matter. Because we keep gaining as long as we keep communication in mind, and the formulas of communication. We keep making gains, we keep getting greater abilities, we're changing IQs, we're doing all sorts of interesting things. And we're not doing anything to amount to anything with sitting still and not thinking. Not even in terms of action. I mean, we could take communication completely out of action and so forth, and sit and contemplate our navels in some fashion or another, and it might be interesting. It might produce phenomena, but to date I've never had it produce a clear. You follow me? Well, there's an impracticality to this totality of communication. But there is no impracticality to the finite levels of communication as we understand them in 21, 28, and Dianetics 1955. There isn't any impracticality. It's the most practical thing you ever heard of. So that you can take any concept and put it on a two-way communication basis and you'll start making gains. Therefore, an auditing session always has the bonus in it of communication. Always has the bonus of communication in it. If communication is there. Now, we don't go all out and say communication is the total answer to everything for the good reason that it's not. But communication is the total as-isness of everything if carried out with a total understanding of everything. So your processes add the understanding of everything to the universal solvent, which will as-is everything. And between these two things, you can't possibly lose. Therefore, in auditing, make very, very sure that that top of the page paragraph is there. You are the auditor. There is the pre-clear. The session is in progress. Communication is going to take place with all of its parts, including acknowledgement. Now, you don't have to do this crudely. You don't have to do it precisely. You can do it in a very relaxed way and still get away with it, but you've got to do it if you're going to audit. Now, establishing these terminals, the character and intention of these terminals, is absolutely vital to an auditing session. If the intention, auditor, and intention, pre-clear, are not there, as well, you do not have communication. So, arrange these things before you begin sessions, and sessions work. Fail to arrange them, and all the brilliant processes in the world will not function. Thank you very much.